This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Sharitz Abdullah. Now, Asian stocks are set for a muted start on Tuesday as traders bide their time ahead of this week's key Federal Reserve decision. The dollar and treasuries were little changed. Futures in Japan and Australia were flat after both the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones closed mildly in the green, but the Nasdaq did better, up 0.6% as technology shares outperformed.
Well, traders are looking for a big day on Wednesday where there are many central banks who are making interest rate decisions, and they are said to be looking for signals on the likelihood of interest rate cuts across the world.
Yeah, so, and at the same time, elsewhere, oil fell further as Saudi Arabia expressed hope that OPEC and its ally will agree to extend production cuts into the second half. However, they struggled to pick a meeting date to discuss supply cuts, which isn't exactly an optimistic sign.
And on top of that, data from American factories and home builders offered the latest signs of weakening demand. Brent crude fell almost 2% to $61 a barrel, down about 19% from its high this year of about $74 that we saw at the end of April. So on the line, we have Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, to give us a bit more insight into global markets. Thank you for joining us, Joe. Now, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross reiterated that the prospects of a major trade deal is unlikely to emerge from a possible meeting at the G20 summit between Presidents Trump and Xi. Now, has this been priced into markets already?
I think largely yes. Maybe not fully, but we're a long way for repricing assets of not having a Chinese U.S. deal. I guess when it comes to G20, you want the optics to stay the same, it's not deteriorate. So we're not looking, I don't think the markets are looking for any deal anytime soon. It would be a positive if they agreed to talk or kind of restart, but I think the markets have priced in that this is going to be a long, drawn-out affair.
And Joe, this week, the three major central banks, the Fed, Bank of England, as well as Bank of Japan, would make interest rate decisions on monetary policy. What are you expecting here in terms of a synchronized effort?
I don't know if it's going to be synchronized in the sense that it'd be done all in one day or one week. But clearly the markets are betting that the central banks are in cutting mode. Whether it's developed or developing, so I maybe nothing. I don't think the global economy is in anywhere near a recession. There's loads of capital out there and liquidity, so I don't think the central banks need to work in concert. But they're leaning in all in the same direction, and that's towards lower interest rates as opposed to higher rates.
And Deutsche Bank, they've announced another round of restructuring that will see the bank move away from investment to transaction banking as well as private wealth management. Is this too late to save the bank, which has seen its share price drop to its lowest in its 149-year history?
Well, I can't talk specifically about stocks or banks in general, but I will say, in general, though, there's a clear difference between U.S. and European banks. In the United States, 10 years ago, and subsequent to the Great Recession, had to recapitalize, work closely with the government and the regulators. At the end of the day, 10 years later, U.S. banks are in great, better shape. They're more profitable. They're bigger. They got good balance sheets. You didn't see that in Europe, across Europe. So even Deutsche Bank, premier banks of Europe, not having that kind of capital base or focus for companies all down the line. So it worries me because, Europe is slipping into a deflationary spiral. $12 trillion globally, negative interest rates, a lot of that out of Europe. That hurts the bank. So this is where, if there's any downside to the global economy, it's not U.S. China trade. It's, in my opinion, it's more so Europe and the bank. So it's a good question about Deutsche Bank.
Thank you so much, Joe. And that was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust of Bank of America Private Wealth Management, weighing in on banks, central banks, as well as the expectations out of the G20 summit. Now, aside from that, China is reeling from the devastating impact of the African swine fever on its pig population and pork industry. Prices of pork have risen dramatically due to falling domestic production, higher tariffs on U.S. pork, as well as uncertainty over when the epidemic will end.
And this has actually resulted in a 2.5% increase in China's April CPI, which is an inflation indicator. In May, food prices also spiked by almost 8% compared to a year ago, as pork prices surged 18.2% in the same period.
Yeah, at the same time, China's Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Affairs, they're predicting that the pork may be 70% more expensive in the second half of 2019, and that the CPI could rise as high as 3%. So pork is a staple in China, and authorities worry that a long-term increase in prices may lead to social unrest.
Now, African swine fever, of course, is a viral disease that only affects pigs. It is not communicable to humans, and there's no need to be wary of any health concerns. It was first detected in northeastern China last August and spread to other parts of the country by spring of this year. So the Chinese government said in April it had culled more than a million pigs in a bid to control the outbreak, but some experts estimate that the number of hogs culled could be more than 100 million. China's overall swine herd actually shrank 21% on year in April, according to data from the Agricultural Ministry.
So actually the trade war exacerbates the swine flu crisis. Last July, China raised tariffs on U.S. pork to 62% in retaliation for methods of trade war against China. And the U.S. accounts for about 30% of pork imports in China. So the swine infection has affected this crisis. So China tariffs on pork ended up hurting itself with the epidemic showing no signs of abating.
Yes, and but this seems to have an the way how this has an impact on us is in particular is on our palm oil prices, because we seem to be benefiting from the ASF as China stepped up on its palm oil imports since November 2019. Now, this is because demand for soybean meal and therefore soybean oil has dropped as a result of this incident. Now, China imported more palm oil instead of, to replace soybean. So we could see the year-on-year growth by 45% between January and 2018. Imports by China estimated about 480,000 tons. And in 2019, we saw a rise of 700,000 tons.
Yeah, I think it is worth mentioning here that while it is still... there has been research to say that it is still safe to consume the meat of pigs which were affected with African swine fever. The issue of is basically in regards to pork prices, because when you have such a steep drop in the supply of pork, obviously prices are going to go up. And while you may think that the supply is still going to, in the short term, inflate because of the number of pigs culled in this period, the concern is that this is not going to be able to stretch over the longer term impact of the African swine fever, because a pig basically takes about 9 months to reach maturity. So that's a 3 month gestation period and a 6 month time to reach maturity. And that's assuming that these farms which have previously been affected by African swine fever are able to completely eliminate the disease before they restart production of pigs. Because the thing about ASF is that it is a virus that is very stable. So it can actually continue to exist in pork feed, so the feed that you feed to pigs, for months without being detected. And if you feed that to an uninfected pig, you are going to have the same problem all over again.
And it's good also to know that there is no swine worry here in Malaysia, because the agricultural and agro-based industry deputy minister Sim Zee Zin says that Malaysia has adequate pork and pig product supplies to meet the local demand. He emphasized that local pork and pig product supplies were safe for consumption. So very little imports of pork products here into Malaysia.
Yeah, so you mentioned how it is very infectious. We could see how it's infected beyond China. We're talking about close by neighbor Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand is also tightening up their monitoring on this this incident. And besides that, there's Poland and Belgium in the list. So Malaysia has banned a lot our imports of pigs and pig products from countries which are affected by this African swine fever.
But of course, the Agricultural and Agri-based Industries Ministry has warned about the consumption of piglets, particularly because piglets here in Malaysia, they are commonly sourced from Vietnam, which is one of the countries on the list that has been affected by the transmission of African swine fever that originally started in northeastern China. Now, the Federation of Livestock Farmers Associations of Malaysia, or the FLFAM, have also said, though, that the ban is not going to affect the prices of local pork supplies. They say that there are more than 500 pig farms in Malaysia and believe that these would provide sufficient supply for Malaysian consumers. As well, the pig industry also, if you take a look at some of the data, contributed about 2.7 billion ringgit in 2017, with 90% of this pork supply coming from domestic sources. Now, we'll be right back with more local news for you in just a bit, so be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.